ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 6, text 5, translation and commentary by the Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada and Acharya. Udhared atmanatmanam natmanam avasadayet atmaiva hi atmano gandhur atmaiva vipur atmanaha. One must deliver himself with the help of his mind and not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. The word Atma, Atma, denotes body, mind and soul, depending upon different circumstances. In the yoga system, the mind and the conditioned soul are especially important. Since the mind is the central point of yoga practice, Atma refers here to the mind. The purpose of the yoga system is to control the mind and draw it away from attachment to sense objects. It is stressed herein that the mind must be so trained that it can deliver the conditioned soul from the maya of nescience. Here, maya is M-I-R-E, an English word, not maya. Maya means, this English word means like filth. In material existence, one is subjected to the influence of the mind and the senses. In fact, the pure soul is entangled in the material world because the mind is involved with a false ego, which desires to lord it over material nature. Therefore, the mind should be trained so that it will not be attracted by the glitter of material nature, and in this way the conditioned soul may be saved. One should not degrade oneself by attraction to sense objects. The more one is attracted by sense objects, the more one becomes entangled in material existence. The best way to disentangle oneself is to always engage the mind in Krishna consciousness. The word he is used for emphasizing this point, i.e., that one must do this. It is also said, mana eva manushyanam karanam bandha mokshayaho bandhaya vishayasango muktai nirvishayam namaha. For man, mind is the cause of bondage and mind is the cause of liberation. Mind absorbed in sense objects is the cause of bondage and mind detached from the sense objects is the cause of liberation. Therefore, the mind which is always engaged in Krishna consciousness is the cause of supreme liberation. Could we have his cell phones off, please? Whoever has their cell phone with them can kindly turn them off. Turn off and turn on to Krishna consciousness. At least for some time, you leave all your material affairs unhooked. No contact, just for now at least. For now. Uthared atmanatmanam, natmanam avasadhyaya. Atmaiva hi atmano gandhur, atmaiva vipur atmanaha. One must deliver himself with the help of his mind and not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. This movement that Srila Prabhupada started is called the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. This term, Krishna consciousness, Srila Prabhupada is taken from the sense of Krishna bhavana, Krishna bhakti nasa bhavita mati. It's one shloka by Rupa Goswami describing how to attain Krishna bhakti, in which this rasa bhavita mati hi, the consciousness which is the mind which is overwhelmed with the consciousness of rasa, that is called Krishna consciousness. So that's ultimately what it means. Krishna consciousness. The consciousness, what does that mean? Consciousness, there's actually the term consciousness, there are two. It's slightly different but distinct meanings. I'm talking about the English word, consciousness. Consciousness means general awareness and it also means specific awareness. When we talk about consciousness in terms of psychology, then it's just the nature of awareness. Generally, in specific awareness, it's like we say self-consciousness, national consciousness. When the awareness is focused in a particular subject, then that's another meaning of the word, another shade of the meaning of the word, consciousness. So Krishna consciousness means to have specific consciousness of Krishna. It's like one who is self-conscious, he's very much aware how people are looking at him, what he looks like, and especially in the modern age, that's very much promoted. You see people always combing their hair, and they're very much, especially ladies, at least in the Western world, they spend, I saw my sisters when I was young, they spend 1.5 to 2 hours painting their face in different ways, different things, combing their hair, and so on, because they're very much self, considering the self to be the body, they're very concerned what other people think of their selves. So that self-consciousness, or national consciousness, one is always thinking of the good, of the country. It's called national consciousness. Krishna consciousness means to be conscious of Krishna. Now in material life, there's material consciousness, which means to be conscious of matter. Means that our awareness only extends to matter, and because we take the Atma, the self, to be the body, therefore, we consider that how the body is interacting with matter, the body and the mind is interacting with matter. This is my self-interest. Yoga means to understand that the Atma is not the body or the mind, but that we are spiritual living beings. We have our relationship with the Paramatma, to become conscious on the spiritual platform, spiritual consciousness as opposed to material consciousness. Now, how the Atma, which is by nature spiritual, is in material consciousness, that is described here in Bhagavad Gita, that Uchad Vesha Samutena Vandalo Hena Bhavata Sarvabhuta Sargayantibhavata. All living beings have come to this material world due to perverted desires, Icha and Vesh, envy of Krishna. Therefore, they are being born again and again in material existence. So this Icha and Dvesh, these are certain feelings and emotions. This is the business of the mind. The mind is the mental or emotional platform. On the platform of rejecting Krishna, then so many material desires come. Krishna bhuli se jivanadi pahimokta dev maya kari dvesham shavadu. Forgetting Krishna, we become inimical to Krishna, and then we become involved in material life and all the concomitant sufferings that go with this by the grace of Krishna's Maya Shakti. So the consciousness not focused on Krishna is focused on material consciousness, which means self-consciousness, how to be, how I can enjoy, how I can be. Ishvaraham aham bhogi siddhaham manavansu. How I will consider myself the enjoyer. How I will consider myself the controller. How I will consider myself perfect, powerful, and happy in material existence. It's the wrong material desires come. So, wrong desires come. So the mind, business of the mind is thinking, feeling, and willing. And the intelligence, that is for discrimination. The mind is accepting and rejecting on the platform of sense gratification. Is something conducive to my sense gratification or not? But the intelligence, that's sometimes called the consciousness in English, when we do it. Our conscious, I was going to shoot him, but my consciousness prevented me. I was going to steal, but then because of my consciousness, I couldn't do it. So that is, of course, inherently, the consciousness means the discrimination between right and wrong. On the material platform, we can never properly understand what that is, because being influenced by material desires, our understanding of right and wrong is perverted. But this intelligence that is meant to discriminate, not simply on thinking, feeling, and willing, that is simply the platform of animals or children. Whatever they see, they want, without discrimination, whether it's actually proper or whether it's good for them or whatever. So here, in this chapter, is describing the mechanical yoga process, the point of controlling the mind. Being described. The mind should be controlled by the intelligence. All these are interlinked: mind, intelligence, consciousness. False ego means perverted sense of consciousness. Sometimes we hear it said someone is very egoistic or egotistic. But actually everyone is egoistic, because everyone has ego. Ego means the sense of thinking, I am. But when the ego is thinking, when we have the ego or the consciousness of thinking that I am, Ishvaraham aham bhogi, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, that is called false ego. But egoism must be there. In the sense that properly, false ego then is real ego. Real ego is to think, I am the servant of Krishna. That is proper egoism. But when we say egoism, we generally think of someone who's very ahankari. They have too much ahanka. They say the I am. I-ness, self-consciousness. That we call egoism. That is false egoism. But real egotism means to think, I am the servant of Krishna. And then we won't have the material ahankar, but we'll have the spiritual ahankar, means to think that aham brahmasmi, I am the servant of Krishna. I am the spiritual living being, I am the servant of the Supreme Brahman, who is Krishna. But on the platform of false ego, our desires, intelligence, everything gets perverted in the wrong direction. Instead of thinking, I am the servant of Krishna, we think, I am the enjoyer of everything I see, and the enjoyer of everything. And so much suffering comes. An intelligent person sees that this entanglement in material life causes suffering, and therefore he tries to control, he becomes a yogi, and tries to control the mind. So the mind, this is described here in Bhagavad Gita, the mind should be controlled by the intelligence on the platform of knowledge. Even any human being, especially those who are more educated, they will direct their mental functions. It's like I was saying, a child, whatever he wants, he sees, he doesn't consider whether it's good for him or not. But an intelligent person, by discrimination, he considers, what should I do with my life? Shall I choose to be in mechanical engineer, software engineer, doctor, which line should I go in? The children are thinking, or they're directed by their parents. You should go for this line or that line. They consciously consider what I should do. Should I try for a transfer within this company, or should I quit the company and get another job? So many decisions are made on the basis of intelligence. But we don't know what's in our ultimate self-interest, then we're simply involved in different varieties of suffering. This is very nicely described by the 5-year-old boy, Prahlad Maharaj, more advanced than any psychologist of the modern age. That because people do not know their relationship with Krishna, the ultimate goal of life is Vishnu, therefore their desires are simply on the external platform. And they're hoping for something which will never happen, which is that they'll be happy in this material world. So everyone is discriminating on the basis of intelligence, but because people do not have atma-gyan, knowledge of the self, apashyatam atma-taktam viheshu grihamedhinam, because they don't see what is real knowledge, knowledge of the self, therefore people are simply involved in material life and trying to be happy on a platform they cannot be happy on. So a person who sees this, who has some perception of this, then he may try to become a yogi and control the mind in such a way that it will be for his ultimate benefit. Any educated person, there is some concept of controlling the mind. It's like, for instance, there may be an exciting cricket match on TV, but if your exam is tomorrow, you control the mind. I'm talking about a materialistic person here. The exam is tomorrow, so I have to forget that India is losing to Pakistan, and India's playing Pakistan means they're losing, presumably. Was it a fix? We don't know. But you have to forget all that and concentrate on your examination. This is on the material platform. Even on the material platform, one has to control the mind for a higher purpose. But they don't know what they're... Actually, they think it's a higher purpose, but it's not really a higher purpose. And you can say just like frogs jumping around in the bottom of a well. But one frog may jump a little higher than the other. So the big boss of a company or someone who he's getting his exam, he's getting a better job. It's just like that. One frog is jumping a little higher. So yeah, but they're basically all in the well. And they're not really going anywhere. They're thinking, you see, I can jump 3 feet and you can only jump 2 feet. But you're still in the well. You're not really going, you're just a frog. Ignorance in the dark well of material existence. But anyway, that point is there that even for material improvement, the mind, there has to be some self-control to put off this immediate pleasure. If I study now and get my exam, I can get a better job, and then I can get a bigger TV, and then the next time the India-Pakistan comes around, I can watch India lose to Pakistan on a bigger TV. Mind must be controlled, even on the material platform, the material development. But one who is more intelligent, who has got very piercing intelligence, so many words are used in the Bhagavatam, here in Gita also, Vedhavi, one who is very intelligent, Manishi, Kavi, so many words are used, for those who have sharply developed intelligence and can understand that our real self-interest is not getting a bigger TV, or getting a better job, jumping higher than the other things. My real interest is to get out of this well of material existence, get out of the frog existence and come to Krishna to understand my real self-interest. My real self-interest is to understand Krishna. So for that purpose, the mind has to be controlled. The function of the mind, thinking, feeling, and willing, accepting and rejecting. This is generally going on the platform of sense gratification in this material existence. The mind is in the Vedic understanding, the mind is considered one of the senses. There are different kinds of senses. There are Gyanendriyas, Karmendriyas. Gyanendriya means that we receive information through the senses by seeing. We can see that there is a picture on the wall. By hearing, we can hear the air conditioner is running. So seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, feeling. So we get knowledge. This is a semi-soft but not fully. We get not fully soft material that we can even deduce by seeing, having touched such a substance before, we can deduce. So that's also on the platform of the mind and the intelligence. The mind and the intelligence combine to make deduction, logical deduction, that I have, in the past I have seen such a material as this, I've touched it, so when I touch it, I'm not surprised. But when I touch it, I get such and such a sense. If I touch it and I got an electric shock, I'd be surprised. We don't expect to get an electric shock from a piece of cloth sitting on the wood. So we would be surprised. So in this way, the senses interact, the mind and the intelligence interact. So just like if we see there's a body of water, we don't try to step on it, because our intelligence, we discriminate. By experience, I know that if I try to step on water, then it won't support me as the ground will support me. So in this way, the mind and the intelligence and the senses, they're all working together. The mind is much involved with the senses. Mind is receiving, is the center of all the senses, and that the mind is receiving sensual impulses. We see something. Is this nice to look at? Is it not nice? If I see there's some nice painting, that's very nice to see. Or maybe there's another painting I don't like to see. There's a painting of someone being shot, or I don't like to see that. It looks horrible. So we just, or we see some food, and again, we discriminate because the senses are working together. So if we see, or here's some preparation, here's some fried porella. Because Indian people, they're mostly accustomed, but many of our Western devotees, they see it and they think, I don't want to eat that, because they know that it's bitter flavor. They don't like that. Or the child, if he sees some medicine, he has experience. I took this yesterday, it tasted horrible. I don't want to eat, I don't want to take. So the mind is receiving sensual input. Yes, should I accept, I see this, should I accept or reject this on the basis of sense gratification? Now, with intelligence, taking knowledge, one should learn what is actually in one's real self-interest. The sense gratification, the impulse to enjoy the senses is much exploited in the modern age, is what marketing is all about. You just walk out in the streets, you'll find all the displays there. Clothing, shoes, there's one store here, they're filling the cars and some gift shopping, all nonsense things. You just look in the window, just exactly what they're selling. Or simply, they're putting in the windows to it, you'll see it, and then you'll desire, oh, I want this. Then you have to decide. But generally, because people's discrimination is very weak, they don't consider whether it's good for me or not, especially children, their discrimination is not very strong. So the children, they're often targeted by the advertising, to buy this toy, this, that, and the parents are saying, no, we can't afford it. They're discriminating. But the child's screaming and crying, no, I have to have it. Because the child is only on the emotional platform, not on the intelligent platform. I don't need this toy. I already have cupboards full of toys I don't play with. But every time they see a new one, they want to get a new one. And the shops are promoting this new toy. Buy this, buy that. Or the buy new clothes. You already have 6 pairs of pants and 30, and the wife has 45 saris and 12 pairs of shoes. But they say, oh, look at these shoes. Very nice. Let me get them. We already have 12 pairs of shoes. Oh, I want more. Or more cars. I already have 5 cars already. I want, oh, this is a nice car. Someone who's rich enough. They like to buy. So this modern society is promoting, buy all these things. People are not discriminating whether it's actually in my best self-interest. If I buy more and more things. But the modern society is promoting that because kaam, krodh, lobh, these three things, kaam and lobh, they go together. Even the kaam, we usually take that it's sexual desire, but any material desire. And when that is enhanced, that you simply want to possess more and more things for sense gratification, that is lobh. So those whose minds are not controlled, ajitendriya, uncontrolled senses, they simply want more and more things for sense gratification. Not considering, not using their intelligence to consider that I already have so many things for sense gratification. They never made me happy, so why should I get more and more things? They never considered. And modern society, but they're promoting this more and more, because from the top to the bottom, people are considering that my real self-interest is simply to enjoy the senses. At the top, the people are making business, making dolls and promoting you should buy more and more saris, and they're producing more and more consumer goods. So the people at the top who are making lots of money, they're thinking, I will get more money and I will be happy. And the people at the consumer, the general consumers, think, I will be happy by buying these products. But no one is happy. Because they don't know what the actual standard of happiness is. I was just seeing in the newspaper yesterday, there's a report from London, how they had a riot on May Day against capitalism. So there was a young boy, he had his head shaved and he had a poster on his head saying, can't you see the system is rotten through and through? They're recognizing that, I mean, the whole thing's rotten, but they're thinking that the big capitalists at the top, they've got so much money, it should be, it's the socialists are going to do, communists. It should be. Why are they enjoying so much? We should enjoy more. We should get as much enjoyment as them. So they see that the whole system is rotten. They're correct. But they don't recognize the nature of the rottenness. They think it's rotten because I'm working so hard and this guy, he's not working any harder than me, but he's getting all the money. And he's enjoying more. But they made the mistake that no one is enjoying. And the solution is not to make a political adjustment this way, that way, the other way, so that everyone gets redistribution of wealth. And that's not the solution. The solution is to understand that all these things, they can't make us happy anyway. So what's the use? What's the use of endeavoring for material happiness when there's no such thing as material happiness anyway? But due to misdirected intelligence, which is fed by wrong information in the modern age. Therefore, people are simply becoming more and more foolish. Even though by intelligence, they are creating more and more facilities for sense gratification. But that's not the actual function of intelligence. The real function of intelligence is to discriminate between that which is actually in our self-interest and that which is not. But without this knowledge in human society, then economic development may be promoted more and more. But actual advancement of human society does not take place. So here Krishna is giving the knowledge by which we can be delivered from the misdirected endeavor to become happy by enjoying the senses. Krishna is giving the knowledge that we are not the body, we are not the mind, we are spirit soul. The intelligence, that is the function of the consciousness. Is that actually the consciousness? When we say consciousness, conscious means the nature of the soul. The intelligence is the function of the soul, but when the function of the soul is covered by the false ego of not understanding who I am, and that instead of thinking I am spirit soul, they're thinking I am the body. So the intelligence, instead of working for the benefit of a real benefit on the spiritual platform, is working against us. Because the intelligence is dominated by the mind's desires for sense gratification. The intelligence should control the mind. But the mind, if instead the intelligence is directed by the mind's desires for sense gratification, then we simply become more and more entangled in material life. In this way, the mind becomes our enemy. If we're thinking, let me enjoy sense gratification, then that mental function, which we think is in our self-interest, is not, because it binds us in material life. It's the donkey chasing after the carrot. You can never find that happiness. Because it's elusive, but you never get it. You're always thinking I'm going to get it, but you'll never get it. It's not possible. Even if you catch the carrot, you'll find that it's only a plastic carrot. There's no happiness in material life. Either way, you're frustrated. You must be frustrated. That mistake they make, the system is rotten through and through. But they're thinking the rich people are enjoying, why are we not enjoying? We should get more money than we will enjoy. But actually the rich people are suffering, and the poor people are suffering. Everyone is suffering. Everyone is frustrated. Those who have less money, they're frustrated because they want to enjoy, but they don't have the facility to. And those who have more money, they're frustrated because they're trying to enjoy, they have all facility, and still they're not happy. So either way, you're simply frustrated. That is material life. So, Krishna conscious means to become intelligent. To come to the platform of yoga means to become intelligent. Modern life means, especially in modern life, it's very fast-paced, high pressure, there's no time to think what is actually the purpose. So, yoga practice or self-realization, that begins when you become detached from, instead of just plunging our mind, our intelligence, and our senses into the endeavor for sense gratification. Just stop. Think. What actually am I doing? What actually is the purpose? What actually is beneficial? Of course, to find that out, if we're in material existence, it's not very easy. We can see we may see to some extent what the problem is. But what is the solution? Why are we suffering? For that we have to take knowledge of how to apply our intelligence in such a way that it will be for our actual benefit. So, therefore, spiritual life begins with asking the right questions. Ke ami kena yame jare tapatroy. This Sanatana Goswami, as the ideal disciple, approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with the proper question. Who am I? Why am I suffering in material existence? That is the beginning of question. Arjuna is on a similar platform. He's in the platform of confusion. He didn't exactly ask Krishna, but why, who am I? Why am I suffering? But Krishna pointed out to him that you are suffering in material existence. You're confused, you're suffering. Why? Because you don't know who you are or what the real purpose of life is. If we don't know who we are, then we can't know what the purpose of our life is, what we're supposed to do, how we're supposed to live in such a way that it will be beneficial for us. So the knowledge that we have to take them. Sometimes people think they'll pick up a book, teach yourself yoga, something like this. But no, it has to be learned. For that one has to go to the proper source to learn, to get spiritual knowledge. One has to approach Guru who will give spiritual knowledge. Knowledge means, here Krishna says that you have to control your mind. Now, how to do that? Guru gives the knowledge by which we can help ourselves. Sometimes we hear it said that, well, everything is Guru's mercy. That's true, but that doesn't mean that we simply lie in bed all day and say that, well, you know, everything's Guru's mercy. Let him, you know, chant 16 rounds. Well, you're the Guru, you do it for me. Yeah, it's all your mercy, so, you know, why are you asking me to chant 16 rounds? You do it for me. No, Guru gives the knowledge of what we have to do, why we have to do it, so that we can apply that knowledge in our lives and become elevated. It's a joint effort. Guru helps, but we have to do our part also. As Prabhupada often used to say, you may be trained, ultimately you have to fly it yourself. There has to come a point where you have to fly it yourself. So a guru gives the knowledge. Here Krishna is the ideal guru, is giving the idea that you have to elevate yourself by your own endeavor. We're not the body, we're eternal spirit soul, we're eternal part and parcel of Krishna. That is the beginning, sambandha gyan, to understand what is our relationship with Krishna. How to apply that in our lives. Now, that is the process of bhakti. And what is the ultimate goal? Prasa Bhakti is called Abhideya. That which is described, that which is defined. And then Prayojan means what is our ultimate necessity, what is the ultimate goal? Going back home, back to Godhead, back to Krishna in the spiritual world. So all this information is given. It's not a small body of knowledge either. To learn about Krishna is unlimited, because Krishna is unlimited. There's so much information. How to apply that in our lives? Because we're talking about becoming detached from the material world. We've been involved in this material world for so long, and this sensual stimulation which we receive constantly is only that from the material world. So to understand spiritual reality, it means to yoga, to come to the platform of connecting with the spiritual stimuli. How are we to understand? That's why you'll see atheistic people, they don't accept that there's any such thing as spiritual life. They say it's just a figment of the imagination. Because how are you to understand what is spiritual life? Everything you see, touch, taste, smell, feel and hear is material. Then how are you to understand? There is God, there is spiritual experience. Of course, there is a process to understand that. That means the consciousness has to be elevated, the consciousness has to be purified. There is a process to lift the consciousness beyond the material sphere, beyond the platform of simply interacting the mind and the senses with the material sense objects. There is a process of uncovering the consciousness so that we can become attuned to spiritual stimuli. There is another platform of existence, parastasmatu bhavanyo vyakto vyaktat sanatana. There is an eternal platform of existence which is beyond everything which is created and destroyed in this material world. So that is a finer level of consciousness. Even on the material platform, there are levels of consciousness. Some people take pleasure, just like last night, I was on the plane with sitting next to some a descendant of Kumbhakarna, it seemed to me, because, you know, it's just like taking more and more meat and his arm in my face and beer and another beer and whiskey and it's completely gross. So that's, I mean, even on the material platform, there are some people who are very gross and there are some who are more cultured. Just like I was discussing the other day with some sannyasi godbrothers. We were talking about Prince Charles, how he's brought up in an atmosphere which is somewhat cultured. He's expected, by his upbringing, he's some appreciation of music and art. And actually he's a philosophically minded person. The British tabloid newspapers make fun of him because he's too cultured for their understanding, the beer drinking British. So he's interested in philosophy, reincarnation, vegetarianism. He has an aesthetic sense. So to the gross beer drinking Brit, Prince Charles is something of a, you know, he's an oddball, an eccentric. Because he's on a more cultured level. So even on the material platform, those who are, even in material consciousness, there are levels that those, someone who is on a very gross platform, they can't at all appreciate. Even you see cheap wine, an expensive one. Someone who's just a cheap wino, they don't appreciate the subtleties of high class wine. That's also there. So there are levels that. Now spiritual consciousness, that is in a different dimension, it's most subtle. Spiritual consciousness means to perceive that which is on a platform, it's on a different platform because everything on the material platform is centered around the false egoistic idea of let me enjoy. But spiritual consciousness means that having gone beyond the platform of personal sense enjoyment, when we link up with Krishna, and we think how to satisfy his senses. Now for a person on the material platform, it's impossible for them to understand this. It doesn't seem to make any sense to them whatsoever. That they think that, yes, we should do everything for our enjoyment. Of course, that can be, apart from gross personal self-enjoyers, those who are self-conscious, there may be expanded consciousness, just like family consciousness, national consciousness. So a person may appear to be selfless. He's doing everything for his family, or he's doing everything for his country, or he's doing everything for mankind. He's sacrificing his abilities to research some cure for AIDS or cancer or something, acting for the benefit of mankind or acting for the benefit of the animals. We should protect the animals, make sure the whales are not killed, or protest against the inhumane way they kill the cows in the slaughterhouses. You should kill them in a more humane way. They're making protests. You should kill them in such a way that they don't suffer so much. So they have a more expanded consciousness than someone who is just simply absolutely greedy. But it's also on the material platform. Ultimately, as Prabhupada exposed, that this, actually it's all for personal self-enjoyment. The philanthropist gets pleasure out of being known as a philanthropist. The person who is acting for the benefit of his family does so because he gets sense gratification from his family. Sense gratification means that there are so many different levels of sense gratification in family life. The grossest is sex enjoyment. But there's also the enjoyment of the father, the child is climbing on his lap, and the feeling that I'm protecting my child, I'm maintaining my child, the child is dependent upon me. The same thing with a dog. People like to keep pet dogs because the dog, the dog is very faithful. He's dependent upon the master. He has this sense that this is my master. So people like to keep a dog because it makes them feel good. The dog loves me. He knows that I'm his master. Whatever I say, he does. And he appreciates when I feed him. He wags his tail and licks me. So the same thing with children, that and then there's the sense of being respected in society as a responsible citizen, and seeing the pleasure of seeing your children go on to become doctors and businessmen, and you can show to others, you see, I lived my life as a successful family man. I did my duty, and my children are all very good and moral, and like this. So this is it's actually another form of sense gratification. And there's also the feeling that, well, you know, my children, they'll look after me in my old age, we hope. Like this. So there are many levels of sense gratification in family life. We're thinking, I'm perfectly selfless, I'm doing everything for my family, but ultimately it's all for personal sense gratification. National consciousness also. Why should you favor India over Pakistan? Why? Why the Pakistanis are, well, they're thinking the Indians are the enemy, and Indians are thinking Pakistani is the enemy. It's all meaningless. But you think, I sacrifice for my country. It's a very, very powerful motive. You see people, they go and they get shot, they get killed for the sake of my country. Whatever that means, we don't know what it means to get killed for the sake of your country, because, you know, whether you get shot dead or not, the country remains there and people are living there, and you get killed for the sake of your, what it means, there are some leaders there who are dominating the country, and if you don't get shot and sacrifice your life for the sake of the country, then some other leaders from another country will come. That's all. Instead of, just like the British were there, they threw out the British, and instead of being exploited by the British, then you're exploited by the Indians. Maybe you feel better that instead of being cheated by the British, I'm being cheated by my fellow Indians. That's all. That is the same thing going on. So national consciousness, it's also another kind of sense gratification. I'm doing my duty for my country. Because I feel good being shot as an Indian soldier, or whatever it is, American soldier. I was reading General Patton when he was of the American forces, was in the Second World War. He gave a short speech to his troops before he sent them to get shot, like D-Day. They landed the troops. On the beach in Normandy, in northern France. And what was going to happen, it was obvious that most of the, especially the first troops who came, they were all just going to get shot to pieces. 90% of them. So, General Patton gave one of this inspirational speech. And one of the things was that, he was saying that, and remember, men, in 50 years' time, when you're sitting with your grandchildren on your knee, they're going to ask you, what did you do during the Great War? So it's very emotive, you see. That you don't want to, he said, you don't want to tell them that I was shoveling something, stool, he used another word, in Minnesota. You want to show to my grandchildren, you see, I'm a hero. So this motivation, you will be, so you can feel good, I'm a real man. So this is all for sense gratification. This extended sense gratification. I'm doing good for my family, I'm doing good for my country, I'm doing good for the team. In the company they try to, you know, you have to do good for your company. Why? Some guy on top is earning. You know, you have to be faithful to your company. So all for sense gratification. So first comes the knowledge that we are not the body, we are spirit soul. Then we can actually act for our real elevation. As long as we don't have knowledge of what the Atma is, who we are, then we may be very good, noble, moral people acting for the benefit of our family, society and country. But it's all meaningless. It's of no benefit to our family, society or country. Or to ourselves. We're thinking, I'm benefiting my family. I'm providing them the best education. They can, later on, all my children will go to America and study. I'm doing the best thing for my family. But unless we teach them to become Krishna conscious, then you're simply teaching them how to become a cat or a dog, along with yourself. You'll again have family. Cat, dog, and whatever it may be. Of course, it may not be the same children as you had this time, but you'll have another set of children, cats and dogs, little puppies like this. So we may think, I'm doing good. But neither for ourselves nor for others, unless we become Krishna conscious, then, because the mind is absorbed in sense gratification, then we are becoming degraded by the mind. Therefore, first of all, we have to get the information of what is our real self-interest, and then act on that platform. We have to do it. We have to do whatever is required to become Krishna conscious and not become degraded. It's very easy to become degraded. Especially in the modern age, to be degraded is considered normal. To become elevated is considered unusual. It's not only considered unusual, it's considered something socially incorrect. You're invited to a party, you have to go to a party for your company, and then you're not eating meat, you're not drinking wine. Well, then how can you advance in your career? You can't advance because it's socially incorrect not to be a sense enjoyer. Why are you trying to be a yogi when you're here? We're here to do business. So the modern society is very much promoting gross sense gratification. It's very easy to be degraded and not very easy to become elevated, but on the spiritual platform, the decision we have to make with our intelligence is anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam, to accept that which is favorable for advancement in Krishna consciousness and to reject that which is not. It's the same thing that's being said here, that one has to have the knowledge of what is favorable, one has to have the knowledge of what is not favorable and act on that platform, and in this way become elevated with the help of the mind. With the mind, instead of thinking that my enjoyment will be eat, sleep, drink, be merry and enjoy, for tomorrow we should all be dead. But rather understand that my real enjoyment is chanting Hare Krishna and being happy on that platform. So we should elevate ourselves with the help of the mind. The mind is receiving impulses to see. Yes, we should see. Put the pictures of Krishna everywhere. To hear the sound of Krishna, hear the sound of the bhajans or the sound of the lectures, Srila Prabhupada lectures. All these sensual impulses. As much as possible, we should arrange the sensual impulses so that they are Krishna conscious sensual impulses. And living in this world, there are so many other sensual impulses. Invitations for sense gratification. Dubai is built up on this. The whole Dubai is built up on provide sense gratification for the world. So the atmosphere here is one of sense enjoyment. The whole material world is thus, but it's enhanced here. So when we see, then we have to consider, is this for my real benefit or not? And when the mind is trained, then there's There's no attraction, actually. There's no attraction that now I have to buy my wife's 46th sari, or the wife herself won't be wife. Better spend the money for Krishna. We have to buy. Instead of thinking, I have to, filling the home with so many useless toys for the children, a pair of kartals, that's nice. That's the kartals and madanga, you can give them. Instead of wasting money watching videos, so many useless, worse than useless, because they degrade the money. Then get Bhagavatam. Get yourself a set of Bhagavatam. In this way, arrange that we are elevated with the help of our mind instead of being degraded. Let the Savai Mama Krishna Padaravindayo. The first thing is to, in Krishna consciousness, in yoga practice, the first thing is to fix the mind on what we are supposed to be doing, which is to be Krishna conscious. Bhaja Hure Mama Srinandanandana. Let us fix the mind on Krishna. So in the beginning, with the intelligence, we have to see what we want our mind to be absorbed in. And take that training that's external and internal. Internally, we have to make the determination to be Krishna conscious. And externally, we take help from other devotees, from Guru, by arranging these, that we are in an atmosphere of Krishna consciousness. Read the books about Krishna. Hear the sound of Krishna's name being chanted. In this way, become elevated by engaging the mental functions in the practice of Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. So what's the question? Is it true or is it false? People are saying because you're going for spiritual life, then you don't develop your career and you're wasting your life. Everyone has to make life decisions. What is the purpose of our life? From the materialistic point of view, if you don't develop your, if you have a good brain and the ability to enhance your career and you don't do it, you're wasting your life. From the Krishna conscious point of view, if you don't develop your Krishna consciousness, you're wasting your life. So you have to see. Of course, Krishna consciousness is not simply a phantasmagorial endeavor. We're also living in this material world. There's consideration of how we have to live in the circumstances we are in, so that material circumstances are, so that our material circumstances are not disturbed. At least not disturbing our spiritual, as much as possible not disturbing, and as much as possible helping. So again, we have to see everything in light of anukul yasya sankalpa, pratikul yasya vajana. What is best for our spiritual advancement? And in non-devotees, they won't understand this. So I many times quote it. I'm very happy that one of my disciples, family man in India, well, actually, for some time he was in one line, but his job kept him busy, very busy. So much so he hardly had time to chant his rounds. I think there's quite a few here like that also. But then he did some course, which he had to spend money for, and had to spend time doing that, so he's even more busy. But then after doing that, he changed his job, so that he's getting enough money, not as much money as he was getting before, but enough money to live and enough time to chant his rounds nicely. Not that I chant 16 rounds a day, you know, one in between the shower and getting dressed, and then another one when I'm going to work, and another one when I'm driving around the town on my clicker. It's not really, when we talk about chanting 16 rounds, it means actually chanting and hearing. More important than chanting 16 rounds is hearing 16 rounds. There's not really much point in making the sound, some kind of sound, that, you know, you're on your cell phone and in the meantime, you know, the phone is ringing as you're walking along the street, and then you've got your clicker and some clicks are going on.
I mean, it's not so conducive for spiritual life. If we don't have time to chant 16 rounds properly, then maybe it's better to get a different job in which you can't chant. I mean, what's the use? At the end of life, you say, I was CEO of a big corporation, and so what? You didn't, where's the Krishna consciousness? So, it's a life decision everyone has to make. This career, it's the same thing. You become a higher jumping frog, that's all. It's of no real value. If you have enough money to eat, sleep, pay your rent and all these things, your needs are provided for, then what is the need to have a bigger apartment, a better car, so-called, and all these things? What's the actual benefit? And you have to work so much and so much anxiety and this and that. Of course, if we say this, people think we're crazy. Actually, what is the benefit? You have more money, so you can buy your wife a 47th sari, new silk sari, 20,000 rupees sari or whatever, gold jari, whatever it may be, but they don't become more happy, and you don't become more elevated, you simply get more anxiety. What's the benefit? But modern society is set up in such a way that people think, you have to get ahead, you have to get a better job. Better job means you work more hours, have more anxiety, and you also get more money, which you don't need, because you only need enough to eat and sleep and all these things. And then you think, well, for my children I have to do it. I have to send them to America, to the best school and this and that. But the real benefit you have to give your children is to teach them to be Krishna conscious. It doesn't actually benefit them if they go to America and study. And mostly they all end up eating meat and everything anyway. So it's actually, instead of being beneficial for them, it's the opposite. No, they'll say so many things. They'll say you're useless, you're a failure, you can't get ahead. Let them say whatever they like. That you have to tolerate. Then you laugh. You say, okay, all right, yes, I'm useless. You're such a great person. You're such a great person. Yes, you're very wonderful. You have all good qualities. You're such a great person. Now just leave me alone. I'm chanting Hare Krishna. I admit I'm useless. What are they going to say more? Then actually they'll be surprised if you don't care for their taunting. Why should you care? If a fool taunts you, what do you care? Why should you bother? You say, yes, I'm useless. You're a very great personality. You're so great. You're so wonderful. I'm simply useless. Therefore, I'm chanting. I have no other shelter but Krishna. You tell them, yeah, well, actually, if you're not married, then yes, you do. Why bother? Why get entangled? If you already have that family responsibility, then you should take it. You tell them that, look, sir, tell them, look, you're a materialist. I'm following spiritual life. So you do your thing, but don't give me advice on spiritual life. I have a guru for that. You don't know what to advise me. You don't know what to advise. You advise whoever you like. As far as spiritual life is concerned, I know more about that than you. So if you are in this matter, I'll give you advice. You don't give me advice. You tell them like that. Another thing you would tell them, I am a yogi. Chanting Hare Krishna, you are a yogi. The job, it should be conducive to spiritual life. In general, jobs are not conducive to spiritual life, but at least, it's better not to be a butcher, for instance. You have to see, you have to see the individual case. Practically everything is sinful. Whatever you're doing. Selling timber is sinful. It's not as sinful as selling meat. It's also sinful because you're cutting trees unnecessarily. But then everything you're doing, you see, Dubai, all these Emirates is based on oil. That's also sinful, extracting. The whole society is sinful. It's all interconnected, whatever you're doing. Even if you're selling milk, people are drinking it to get strength to engage in sinful activities. And they're torturing the cows. So, where is the job which is free from? Actually, Prabhupada, he wanted that, Prabhupada is saying that we should have farm communities, grow our own food, live a pure life. Get out of this stinking, disgusting, rotten through and through society. That's best. Who's got the guts to do it? That's immaterial. Ghostly form is material. It's not spiritual. They say, in English, they say that's a spirit. But when Prabhupada used the word spiritual, that means on the transcendental platform. It's a subtle material body. It's not spiritual.
Third, Maharaj has been associated with Krishna consciousness of almost 20 years. And he's a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. He basically hails from Ireland, and he has spent most of his life. He joined Krishna consciousness when he was 18. Just as he completed his schooling. And after that, most of his time has been spent in the subcontinent. He's been preaching in Bangladesh and various places in India, South India, a lot of time in Gujarat. He spent time in Vrindavan. And by dint of his experience of being in India, many of you must have seen him on this program which comes on TV, which is Atma, where he gives Hindi lectures. He uses Shuddha Hindi, unlike what we usually do. There's no Urdu or there's no any such mixture. And he is also very well versed in Bengali, because he's been in Bangladesh for a long time and by dint of study. And he has been one of the first. ISKCON has an examination for people who study the Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is known as the Bhakti Shastri. And he was, for almost 8 or 9 years, he was one of the first toppers of the Bhakti Shastri. And for 8 or 9 years, there was nobody to score as much as he did, whether they were of any people of all various devotees in India, every nationality.